This is Judge Diane Bradfold. I'm presiding today along with my colleagues, Judge Gene Cochran and Judge Randy Sleater. Today's date is July 29th, 2020. This court has three matters on its oral argument calendar. I see we've got counsel for the second matter today, so I will ask the marshal to call the second case.
Now calling file number A19-2056. Aaron Peterson, petitioner respondent versus Brandy Peterson, appellant.
And counsel, I'll make just a couple of quick remarks before we go ahead with the arguments. First of all, to note that we are having this argument today via WebEx, and we're doing that pursuant to the current public health orders and guidance. We very much appreciate counsel appearing today in this format. And then just to remind you of a couple of things, some of which you may already be well aware of, consistent with our WebEx format, I'll have you note that you've got a mute your mic button on somewhere on your screen, lower left, and you'll see that the judges do that while they are not speaking, and we ask you to do likewise. The reason we do that is because it greatly improves the sound quality, both during the argument as well as in our audio recording, and we are recording proceedings today, and they'll be available on our website. And then secondly, just make sure that you identify yourself for the record so that our record is clear, as well as the name of the client that you're here representing. And finally, please keep an eye on the clock. You'll see that in the segment of the screen where the marshal is sitting. He's got a smartphone that will count down initially 15 minutes for both sides. And then when if the appellant chooses to go ahead with a 5-minute rebuttal, the clock will be adjusted and we'll give you 5 minutes. So with that, I think that we're ready to proceed. And counsel for appellant, you can begin when you're ready. Counsel, I think that you, Mr. Duffy, you seem to still be on mute, so I'll just remind you. Nope, that's just fine, and if you'll just start over, we'll start the clock over.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Kevin Duffy. I'm an attorney for the appellant, Brandy Peterson. We filed this appeal relating to the order of Judge Schieferdecker denying our motion, our Nice Peterson motion for change of custody. Just by way of some general background facts, these parties had a stipulated judgment and decree from May of 2016. The appellant, Ms. Peterson, was not represented by counsel. There were three children involved. Calliope was age 4 at the divorce. Deani was age 2.5 or 3 at the divorce. And Sigrid was 10 months old. The parties agreed or stipulated to joint legal custody. The sole physical custody was granted to the respondent, subject to the appellant's right of liberal visitation. They also stipulated that it would be in the best interest of their children to remain in Warren, Minnesota after the divorce was granted. It's very, very, very important to note in this case that Sigrid is totally deaf and in need of interpreter who would know sign language. Deani is has some limited hearing difficulties as well, and the oldest child does not have any hearing issues. The other important thing to note here in this case, which I believe makes it a little unusual from most cases you see, is that both parties are deaf, but they are fluent in sign language. The appellant was basically finishing, was in Fargo, North Dakota at the time the divorce was granted, and she was there working on her education and completing some of her degrees. And so she was a substantial distance away from Warren, Minnesota, about two hours or so. When it came to the issue of substantial change,
counsel, regarding where appellant was living at the time the decree was signed, I thought the decree indicated that both parties lived in the county.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So is there any evidence as to when she moved to Fargo?
I believe it was a couple of months before the divorce was finalized. So, again, she wasn't represented by counsel, and so she probably didn't pay that much attention to that. But you're right. It does indicate that she lived in Warren. But I think it's pretty in the pleadings that were filed, she maintained and declared that she was, in fact, in Fargo, North Dakota.
Well, I think she said she was enrolled in school. I don't think she said she was actually living there. I mean, you can be enrolled in college and sure. Not go to college. You know, I have a son who's hopefully going off to college in a few weeks, and he's enrolling before he's going to physically be present there. So I don't see any facts in her affidavit stating exactly when she took up residence in Fargo, but maybe I missed that. Maybe if you could point me to that, that would be helpful.
I don't have it right in front of me. All I can tell you is that the fact is that that she was in fact living in Fargo at the time that this divorce was granted.
Did the judge understand that then?
I don't believe he probably did from the reading of the opinion. But again, I just know that in the she filed a couple large affidavits, and it was clearly stated in there that she was in fact living in Fargo, North Dakota. In fact, one of the things I would point to is that there's part of her affidavit which talks about the distance involved between Fargo and Warren. There's other parts of her affidavit talk about how she actually had Sigrid for a period of time when she was down in Fargo and actually enrolled him in daycare. So I guess if it doesn't specifically come out and say that she was living in Fargo, the surrounding facts that were detailed in her affidavit concerning these kids clearly kind of show that was in fact the situation, that she was in fact living in Fargo, North Dakota at the time the divorce was granted. So obviously when we talk about substantial change, one of the things she brought up was the fact that she moved back. And I know that opposing counsel made reference to the fact that in her affidavit, she talked about the possibility of moving back, and he related that to that Spanier case. But I think this case is distinguishable from that in the sense that in that case, you had a person who already had the mom already had a degree and was enrolled in the military. So it was almost a guarantee that she would be going and be relocated probably because of her job to different parts of the country with her military service. In this case, at the time of the divorce, Miss Peterson did not have a degree yet. She was working on that. There's no guarantee that she was going to finish the degree. She obviously did. She also could have met another man and swept her off her feet and gone and moved somewhere else. So we felt that it was a substantial change in circumstances that she did in fact come back to Warren, Minnesota. The judge disagreed with that, and we take exception to that. But I think even more important than that, when you talk about a substantial change, was the claim that I think was really unrebutted by her, that she, when they got divorced, she was under the impression, justices, that Mr. Peterson would become Mr. Mom, basically. He's going to step in and take care of these children and come engage with them. And instead, what he did was he replaced himself with a nanny. And going forward, which again, she detailed his long work hours. He's a spray pilot. He has that business, which takes him out of town for substantial lengths of time. She also detailed vacations, long vacations that he would go on, which certainly everybody's entitled to. But the fact is that he basically replaced himself with a nanny who was there, spent a substantial amount of time with these children. And
Duffy, could I inquire on that point? A couple things. I'm assuming, by the way, other records suggest that his career hadn't changed since the day of their divorce. Am I correct about that?
That's correct.
And so his hours and being away from home would not be new information, I'm presuming, as a result of that.
But the important thing that, Justice, is that, did I break up here? No, the screen is.
Mr. Duffy, your screen is frozen, but we can actually hear you just fine. So you can go right ahead. It's assuming you can hear us. Can you hear us? Maybe not. So I'll just have the marshal hold that time on the clock. It looks like, more than Mr. Duffy is, well, maybe it is just Mr. Duffy. And I assume he knows how to get back in touch with us, so we'll just wait for a few moments. Okay.
Are you still there, Judge?
We are there. We've been waiting for you. No problem.
Somehow disconnected. I apologize for that. I don't know why. But I'm going to go back to the last comment about his job. That's the good point. I mean, his job did not change. So when she says this is what his job was, long hours, away for long periods of time, took vacations, that didn't change. So he's not around the kids that much. And so the thought was, is that when they got divorced, is that he would change. It didn't happen. And so when you talk about a substantial change, the fact is she saw that change, the non-change in his job to become Mr. Mom is actually a substantial change. He wasn't the guy that he was going to be. Instead, he replaced himself with a nanny. And you might scratch your head and you go, okay, so what's the significance of that? The significance is this, is that they're both deaf. Both parents are deaf. And Mr. Peterson basically made a decision that he wasn't going to step in and become involved in cigarette. And I got him jumping around here a little bit, but that substantial change of not changing also ties into the whole endangerment issue. Sigurd was only 10 months old when they got divorced. And so the one comment in the opposing brief was that, well, you know, while we're only talking about Sigurd, they're not talking about the other kids. But the fact is that Deani and Calliope were both almost 5 and 3 when the divorce happened. They were on their way towards having had the benefit of their mother and linguistic development. Again, the oldest daughter didn't have deaf hearing issues, but Sigurd was only 10 months old. So think about a little baby that you have. You don't start talking to the baby. I mean, you talk to them at 10 months old, but the nanny he hired to replace himself was linguistic deficient. She was sign language deficient. So you have a little child. Think about it. If you have a normal baby who's in your house and all you have is a person there that can say single words, can't say sentences, how in the world is that normal child going to develop? And so the decision by Mr. Peterson to replace himself with a nonverbal, sign language sufficient person, in our mind, again, we cited that Allen case, we cited that social services article there. They say that that's so important for young children that are that age in a developmental stage to be in an environment where there is the sign language sufficient person, and there's a positive sign language home environment. Because the opposing counsel, their brief said, well, you know, they do have an interpreter. Now Sigurd, when he finally went to preschool, he's got a teacher, a special ed teacher. He has an IEP. He has an interpreter. That's great. But again, look at that. Where did that come from? That came from Mrs. Peterson moving back and basically putting her foot down to say, this child is deficient. This child is delayed. And she, the
counsel. I certainly understand your argument and mother's concern for Sigurd's speech development. But by the time the motion was brought and heard, I think the record reflected that he had exceeded his IEP. And under the statute, I think there has to be that the present environment has to endanger the child's well-being. So how did the district court err in its finding that the children were not endangered given the facts regarding their present language development?
Sure. And that good question, Ellen. I'm glad to answer it. Number one, Judge, is they used that and said, oh, the mom came in and mom did this. And so Deani did well in his academic achievement. Sigurd exceeded his goals. What you have to remember is that when you talked about his goals, you got to take that in the context of what the mom presented to the judge. Sigurd was very severely delayed because he was in an environment before he went to school from 10 months until 3 with this nanny who can't sign language. So he's I'm writing to the Helen Keller movie, she gets mad and she bangs dishes around and she throws things and she hits people and acts out. And those were the kind of things that reminded me that Sigurd was doing because he couldn't communicate because he had a nanny who did not have a sign language sufficient environment, because she could only do one words at a time. 10 to 20 She had 10 to 20 word vocabulary, judge. And so you say, how would the judge go wrong? The fact is, Sigurd did exceed his IEP and his goals, but his goals were down here. It's be like somebody who had a car accident and said, we're going to start working out a walk. And you're going to start to walk. You go, oh, I can take baby steps. Oh, does that mean that you can run? No, you're still way behind the curve because, you're making progress, so your goals are set realistic, and he exceeds those. But the fact is, he's still delayed. And to this day, that's not in the record, but the fact is he's delayed and continued to be delayed. So he did meet the goals that had been established, but they were so low because of where he was coming from and the environment that he was in. And so, this thing relates to the environment that the dad intentionally created. And basically, the thing that really hit me was this Hudson case we referred to you. I see this thing as realistically as like a medical issue. It's a hearing issue, but it's something that's so probably even more than a medical issue, the constipation with this child in Hudson. But this is like this whole child's being. I mean, to be able to communicate, and then you're emotionally distraught and psychologically distraught because you can't communicate with the world. You can't tell your feelings. You can't tell your thoughts because all you can say is one word. Or the nanny says, well, it's all right to point. And so that whole concept of our position is that Mr. Peterson totally and intentionally neglected the needs of this child, like similar to the mom in Hudson, where she neglected and didn't pay as much attention to the constipation issue of that young child. And the Court of Appeals said, you know, you neglect a serious medical condition, that's a basis for changing custody. And the importance of linguistic to have a sign language friendly environment and a positive environment like that. That Allen case, again, it's a Washington case, judges, but it hit the point. I mean, the importance, 90% of your language development is between 0 and 6. And so now Sigurd just turned 5 a few days ago. So you've got one more year where you get the majority of his linguistic understanding. And in that case, the importance of that environment, which is, again, an environment that was going to be presented by his mom, the appellant here, is so important that they actually looked at that whole analysis and said, you know, the dad's not a bad guy, just like here, Aaron's not a bad guy either, but he's not taking this child's linguistic development seriously, just like the dad in Allen. He's not doing that. And it's obviously important in Minnesota, it's important in Washington.
So, counsel, I'm going to interrupt you just briefly to point out that your 15 minutes has expired, and you might have lost track of that. It is hard to keep your eye on the screen showing the countdown. Sorry. No problem. And I just wanted to stop you to call that to your attention and then check with both judges. Were there any other questions for Mr. Duffy at present? Or, of course, we have 5 minutes for your rebuttal. Okay. It looks like the judges don't have any questions. Mr. Duffy, are you ready to turn to respondent now? Did you get a chance to complete your thought? Sounds like you did.
Yes.
All right. Very good. And remember, you do have your 5 minutes for rebuttal. So with that, I think that Marshall will reset the clock for you, counsel for respondent, and we can hear from you.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Kerry Rosenquist. I am counsel for the respondent in this case, Aaron Peterson, the appellee. Your Honor, I'll dispense with the background. Mr. Duffy got that pretty much correct, and I think both our statements of the case are and background for the facts are accurate. I want to point out that I don't believe we had a record at all of Mr. Duffy. By Mr. Duffy in the trial court, that my client Aaron Peterson was to be Mr. Mom after the divorce. I don't think that was the case at all. Mr. Peterson, despite his developmental issues that he had himself while growing up, has managed to make a very good living for himself as the operator and owner of a Sky Tractor company. He operates out of Warren, Minnesota, and he has branches in both Texas and Florida. So he's very busy in the summertime. That's the time, as farmers would say, you make hay. He's not so busy in the wintertime, except for making sure that everything is ready to go when things start up again in the summer. So Mr. Peterson did have that time off in the winter, but not in the summer. Now, what are you going to do with three small children in the summertime in Warren, Minnesota? Are you going to find a nanny who is sign language proficient? Probably not. He found a nanny to take care of his children's basic needs, which was prudent and on his part, plus required by law. He has to make sure his children are taken care of. Now, Mr. Peterson wasn't doing this alone, and he wasn't doing it alone with the nanny. He had the privilege of having his mother present. Now, his mother just retired recently from the University of North Dakota, where she held a master's degree and was a linguist herself, specializing in deafness and in deaf education. She obviously, from the time that my client was just a little boy and he became deaf because of a childhood illness, has learned and developed sign language herself. His brother also speaks in sign language, and several of his other relatives speak in sign language. They all live in the Warren, Minnesota area. They all support Zygrud in his developmental needs, and Deani as well. Now, Deani also has an IEP. That child is deaf in one ear, and that's congenital. And Zig is congenitally deaf from birth, and it had nothing to do with any childhood illness. So
Counsel, appellant argued that the goals for the youngest child, the IEP goals, were set very low. Can you respond to that argument?
I don't know how low they were, Your Honor. I didn't see the IEP, and I'm unsure whether Mr. Duffy saw the IEP, but I would agree with that he's right. I would agree that an IEP sets a minimum amount of goals, and they want them achieved. Certainly at age five, and he just turned five, Zygrud is not going to have the linguistic ability that any of us have in this courtroom today. He's 5 years old. He develops that as he grows older. Now, to be able to speak, I don't know that he's going to be able to speak very well and articulate his words and enunciate words, but he's going to be able to eventually learn how to spell words, eventually string sentences together. That's what you learn when you go to school. Kindergarten, first grade, second grade, you learn sentence structure, prepositional phrases, and such, and you can learn that by your special education teachers that know sign language. And as a point of
counsel, it seems to me maybe you're referring to facts that are outside of the record at this point. Or could you point me to where in the record we can find that information?
That isn't in the record, Your Honor. Okay.
Why don't we turn to another issue, which is the mother's relocation back to Warren? Why isn't that move back a substantial change?
Your Honor,
given that at the time, it was known she wouldn't be in Warren, and now she's back in Warren.
Your Honor, as I pointed out in my brief, Ms. Peterson wasn't really much of a stay-at-home mom to begin with. She had different interests in different people. And my understanding was that she was out and about quite a bit. Now, when they got divorced, I believe it was May of 2016. I don't know that she was in Fargo at the time. She may well have been. But going back to Warren wasn't really a plan that Mr. Peterson had. He had no idea that she was going back to Warren. And I believe it was pointed out in the trial court in the affidavit, he was surprised to find that she had moved back to Warren. But
she states in her affidavit that she planned to move back, and we have to accept the allegations in her, and the district court said it accepted the allegations in her affidavit as true. So why didn't the district court abuse its discretion when it found that the move back was not a substantial change? Why was that a correct determination?
Well, Your Honor, Ms. Peterson, in her affidavit, states that it was always her plan to move back. And if it was her plan to move back, then it was not a change of circumstances. I believe that was in appendix page 17, cited in my brief on page 12. So if she thought she was going to come back, why is that a change of circumstances? It wouldn't be, and I think that the judge...
Well, appellant argues she was gone, she was living, you know, 2 hours away, and now she's not, so her physical presence is a change in circumstances.
Your Honor, again, if she contemplated moving back, and she contemplated moving back at the time of the divorce, then it's not a change of circumstances. She knew she was going to be coming back. She didn't make any kind of a stipulation or an agreement with Mr. Peterson that when she came back, things would be different. But they did modify between the two of them their visitation to allowing her to have every other week during the summer. And then she turned that down because she wanted to work in Thief River Falls, and she couldn't have the children for a week at a time while she was working in Thief River Falls. So Mr. Peterson, although wasn't obligated to do so at the time, attempted to try to amend the visitation to suit her needs. It just didn't work out for her. And she didn't like it. But you know, and that goes to now, Your Honor. We're talking about what might happen in the future. If she's still working in Thief River Falls, how is she going to have Zig as a full-time child if she's working full-time? And who's her nanny? We talk about Mr. Peterson's choice of nannies not being able to sign. Well, where do you find a person who can sign and is employed as a nanny in Warren, Minnesota? You do the best you can. But he now has, his mother's retired. He has other support people who can sign. They're able to communicate with Zig, Zigrud, and his needs are being met. They're being met in school, and they're being met elsewhere. As a point of fact, it was Mr. Peterson went to the Warren School. The Warren School helped and met all of his educational needs. He didn't turn out so bad. You know, he's a business owner of no small stature in the Minnesota area.
Mr. Rosenquist, a question. The parties have joint legal custody and did by agreement, as I understand it. My question is, does the record reflect how they have communicated with each other regarding issues. And really the big issue seemed to be their son, Sig, and the nanny and the IEP and education. Does the record reflect that? And the reason I ask that is, although I don't see it in the judge's order, does that reflect, you believe, on the judge's separate decision regarding whether there's a prima facie basis for endangerment?
I don't think, Your Honor, that the judge took that into consideration. And admittedly, and I think Mr. Duffy would agree, the parties don't get along all that well. They do communicate, but their communications seem to be after the fact. It's more on Ms. Peterson's part asking forgiveness rather than asking permission. And on Mr. Peterson's part, he makes decisions affecting the children rather unilaterally, but he does so with the advice of the people around him, not necessarily Brandy, but his mother and the folks at the school system. Now, I don't know if that answers your question or not, Justice, but I don't think it was taken into consideration by Judge Schefferdecker as to whether or not my client communications with Ms. Peterson were adequate or not. As far as point brought up that there's a significant change of circumstances or an endangerment, there certainly is not. The danger has to be specific in nature, and it has to be a significant degree of danger. There's not a significant degree of danger here. Now, Mr. Duffy has submitted in his appendix a treatise written about teaching deaf children and how that the author of that treatise determined that between the ages of 0 and 6 is significant. I don't doubt that a bit. It's very easy to learn languages when you're young. I think the court will agree that all 3-year-old kids in China can speak Chinese better than any of us can, and we'll never be able to speak that well. The same thing appears with the blank slate of a mind of a child who is deaf. I don't doubt that. However, you have to have the people available to teach the child, and Mr. Peterson has found the people available now that can teach this child. And they were on board before. But the law in the state of Minnesota isn't whether or not it's best to have the child taken out of the home and put into a school for the deaf. The law is that there has to be a significant degree of danger. There hasn't been shown that there's a significant degree of danger here, not for Zigrud or Dione or any of the children. There's not a significant degree. He is managing these 3 children, managing very well, and getting them the help they need, the help that's appropriate, the help, the education that he had himself, that he utilized to develop himself into a businessman of, again, no small stature. So to say that there's any degree of danger at all is really pushing the envelope. I see my time is up. Are there any other questions, Your Honor?
Is there anything from the panel? All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Rosenquist. We appreciate your argument. And with that, we have moved to the final stage of our oral argument. And Mr. Duffy, if you choose, you've got 5 minutes for rebuttal. I actually lost the visual on you, but I'm hoping that we can hear you, your audio. Let's see. Sounds like we might have lost you again, Mr. Duffy. Oh, there he is. All right. So, Mr. Duffy, you seem to be on mute. But the marshal will reset the clock for you, give you 5 minutes.
Okay.
And then you can proceed with your rebuttal argument.
And I apologize if I'm jumping around here, but I'm going off of my notes with this, what Mr. Rosenquist said. So a couple of things. I would agree with him that it was probably prudent of Mr. Peterson getting a nanny. However, the fact of the matter still remains is that the first nanny was totally deficient in sign language. The second nanny was not much better. Number two, as far as the grandma is concerned, I think the documentation that was submitted shows that she had did not have a substantial amount of involvement with these kids. And that probably relates back to the last comment which Mr. Rosenquist made with respect to his own client. He said he's a successful businessman and he did this and that. He had a mom that obviously was appears to have been fluent in sign language, then he had the benefit of that. And of course, at school and at home. And what I think the argument that Mr. Rosenquist is missing here is that it's like anything when you deal with schooling, is that why do they always talk about why do Catholic or private schools seem to do better? They've got parents who are appear to be more engaged. And that means engaged after school, on the weekends, in the summer months, involved in their kids. And so that's what we're dealing with here is that.
Mr. Duffy, could I just direct you back to your first point, and you mentioned it in your initial comments as well. Mr. Rosenquist makes an excellent point, it seems, on its face, and that is, given the geography where Warren is, isn't it at least relevant to the court on the availability or lack thereof, number one, of nannies, but number two, of nannies who are proficient in sign language, as it applies to whether there's an endangerment by not having one that can be fluent?
Good point, Your Honor. And I guess my comment back to that would be, yes, that ties right back into my client's whole point of why there needs to be a change of custody, because Mr. Peterson dropped the ball as far as being that parent, that hands-on parent at home. And at least if my client has this change of custody, she can step in and be that. Because the nanny's there, obviously the nanny's not involved with Sigrid at least, and Deani when they're at school. It's when they're not at school. Those 4 or 5 hours when they're back from school till they go to bed. The weekends, every other weekend, when you got a nanny there. And a substantial amount of time in the summer. So mom's there to fill that gap and to pick up the shortfalls and the shortcomings that exist with respect to that those children and the sign language that they need.
Mr. Duffy, can you point us to where in mom's affidavit she talks about the amount of time she'd be able to spend with the children if the custody arrangement was changed to grant her request for 50-50 custody?
I believe there's
physical custody, that is.
Yeah, and obviously the affidavit she had was extensive. I believe that she did discuss, in fact, the flexibility of her job and being able to adjust that accordingly so that she would be able to spend substantial amounts of time after school.
I may be not remembering correctly, but I thought she stated in her affidavit that she worked 5 days a week and one Saturday morning a month. Is that correct?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
So I guess I'm wondering the factual basis for your argument is in terms of
the point would be
I'm sorry, go ahead.
If you work an eight to five job, you still have 5 o'clock till 8 or 9 o'clock when those kids go to bed, where you've got the ability, where most kids do their homework and things like that. You know, you've got those hours, you've got the weekend, one Saturday morning for 3 or 4 hours that she has to work, but then the whole rest of the weekend. And then you've got a substantial amount of time in the summer where you can really kick things into gear and make substantial progress with respect to this child.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Okay. And you know what, Judge, I can't see this clock. There's a line going through that. So I don't know so I don't need to The last point I'm going to make in 25 seconds is this, is that Mr. Rosenquist says that you have to show substantial change or substantial endangerment. You know what? The review article we supplied, the Allen case, I think clearly shows the importance of linguistic development, and linguistic neglect is akin to child neglect or child endangerment. And that clearly is significant, and it's important, and was a reason for this, our showing of endangerment in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much to both lawyers today. We really appreciate hearing from you on this matter. It greatly helps us in our consideration of this case. And I think, as you both know, we've reached the end of the argument portion today. And so this matter is submitted to the court for its decision. We will issue a written decision within the statutory timeframe. So with that, we've concluded the second oral argument on our calendar today. We're going to go into a brief recess while things get set up for the third oral argument. And again, our thanks to both counsel on this today. The matter was well briefed and well argued. We very much appreciate it. Thanks so much.